Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's football commercial season. Become a USA Today ad meter panelist and watch and rate the big game commercials. You'll be entered to win a trip to the big game in 2022 just for registering. Sign up now and see official rules at admeter.usatoday.com.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Counter. I'm Chris Corman of For the Win, joined, as per usual, by Stephen Ruiz and Charles McDonald. Guys, what's up? I don't even know what to call this week, the week before the week before the Super Bowl. How's it been so far?
Just trying to get to the end of the week.
I was about to say, did you almost forget who you're normally joined by on the podcast?
I have to try to remember which one of you I mentioned first the last time, because I don't want to slight either of you. I don't want to create like animosity between you.
Well, good, because I'm keeping score.
Because Steven, you still have, I think you still have lead NFL writer in your bio, and like I'm not really sure. I don't know anymore. there's a competition, man. You're not a QB. I'm not just going to hand you the starting job.
Someone mentioned that. They told me I was a backup NFL writer now because Chuck joined. Oh, yeah. I was like, I'm fine with that. I don't care.
Who was that someone?
It was just some random dude on
Twitter. Yeah, some random. I look like a Bills fan.
Now you know my burner. All right, cool. we're not going to talk too much about the Super Bowl this week. We have an exciting slate of stuff next week, which we'll tell you about. This week, we're going to dig in on this Texans situation because it somehow keeps getting weirder and worse. Just when you think it can't possibly be more of a mess, it finds a way to get there. So we'll talk about that. And then we asked for questions from you guys on Twitter. We got a lot, and we are going to try to dig into as many as we can. We sort of organized them by topic. We have a bunch about QBs and the QB situation. As we've said on this show, it's shaping up to be the wildest off-season QB carousel that we've ever seen by a lot. So we have some questions about that, some other draft-related questions, off-season-related questions, a few that are directly related to the Super Bowl. And then friend of the pod, Mina Kimes, has come in with the best question, which I will save for last.
Best? Really? Is it the best?
I think Steven, well, I mean, Steven's going to
hopefully. It's like, definitely the best. We'll probably How dare get you?
A 7-minute soliloquy from Steven, his thoughts on cartoons. So we'll dig into all of that as we go. The Texans, so I don't even know where to begin with this. The Deshaun Watson has officially requested a trade. Adam Schefter reported that this morning. Apparently, the request came weeks ago, which is no surprise to anyone who's been following the story. It was clear that Watson wanted out. He appeared in an Instagram photo in an Atlanta Falcons jacket. So, and he was tweeting cryptic lines from songs and making it pretty clear. But it is official, and that comes in the wake of Wednesday night. The Texans announced, or it was broken, that they had hired David Culley, who, honestly, he was the passing game coordinator for the Ravens this past season. I live in Baltimore and pay some attention to the news. And like, people were repeatedly asking John Harbaugh, like, you're not going to lose anyone, right? And Harbaugh's like, no, we're not going to lose any of our assistants. I wish they were going to get a good job, but we're going to be back and it's going to be fine. And then David Culley, who I would imagine that 75 to 95% of Ravens fans had no idea that David Culley was on staff with the Baltimore Ravens. He'd only been there a year.
I had no idea who he was, and I get paid to talk about the league.
You know what? I thought there was a dude who got, I think, got hired by the Jaguars that had a similar name, and that's what I thought throughout the whole time. I'm like, wait, what? You talked about the Jaguars already?
Yeah.
Same.
First of all, David Culley is 65 years old, which bucks the trend of young offensive geniuses getting coaches. He's a black coach. So at least we have that, right? And I think he was one of the first black QBs to play in the SEC.
Yeah, he's one of the first to ever play at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
I think there's an article on Chiefs.com, which is pretty interesting, where I think he said he was the first one to not get moved to another position upon arriving to camp.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, and also I found the other guy I was thinking of. Joe Cullen is the Ravens defensive line coach that got hired by the Jaguars to be their defensive coordinator.
Right. So David Culley, the interesting thing about him is he has coached for a long time, but he has not actually been an offensive coordinator in a coordinating role since he was at Texas El Paso in 89-90. He's been a wide receivers coach at Texas A&M and with the Bucks, Steelers, and Eagles. So he's part of the Andy Reid tree in a lot of ways. He is an Andy Reid guy. We've all been obviously looking at Eric Bieniemy as the Andy Reid protege who would move up into a job this year. But Culley has also obviously worked for he was with Sean McDermott, who's also part of that Reid family. And then most recently, like I said, he only joined the Ravens in 2019, but has worked with Harbaugh. So he's worked with some good coaches. Steven, I think you have a pretty unique take on this, and I'm interested to hear what Charles has to say about it, too. What was your first reaction to this sort of I don't know that I'd seen this name mentioned as a potential head coach this year anywhere. So it really came out of the blue. What was your reaction?
My initial reaction was like, it was just who? And then as I looked up his Wikipedia page, I was like, what? Why? But I've said this a couple times during the offseason. Like, we have no idea who's going to be a good head coach and who's not going to be a good head coach. We've seen guys that have called plays just crap the bed when they get a chance to be a head coach. We've seen guys that haven't called plays but have been hyped up as coordinators do the same thing. We don't know. Like, if he's the CEO type and he does a good job of hiring coordinators, and the fact that he's worked under three of the brightest coaches in the league, like Sean McDermott, Andy Reid, John Harbaugh, are all guys that I think are on the cutting edge when it comes to how the sport is evolving in the NFL.
Right.
I'm assuming he picked up a lot of info from those guys. And if he can apply it to his coordinator hires, then I think it wouldn't be that bad of a hire. The problem is this didn't happen in a vacuum. He got hired by Jack Easterby. He is 65 years old. He decided to keep Tim Kelly as offensive coordinator, which I don't agree with. And it doesn't seem like it's going to work out, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went to another team if it had worked out.
Interesting. Charles, what do you think?
Well, I feel like first I want to say that, after all that this offseason has been through, it is kind of nice to see a black man get at least one head coaching job this offseason. And for me personally, that's like the only real benefit that I can think of when it comes to this hiring. The bringing back the OC was pretty weird because I feel like I don't know if you guys agree with me on this or not, but I feel like if you go back and watch that Houston Texans offense from last year, a lot of it was just like Deshaun Watson just making crazy throws. Yeah. Like all throughout the game. So like, I don't really get where you get the confidence with that one. I don't know if that's him deciding because you just look at the numbers and say, oh, this must have worked, and you bring him back, or if that was Cal McNair. What's interesting to me about this hire is like, usually you're like around this time, like whenever you're a fan or, someone running these teams, like you're really just trying to play the long term, like with all these hires, like just trying to sell it as like this long term thing that's going to work out. Maybe things didn't work out last year, but we got our guy. We're getting back on the right track. But like the Texans need something to get fans reinvigorated now. And I don't think that this is the hiring to get people all fired up about Texas football. Now, obviously, that would change if they start winning games. But like you're talking about an off season where you're probably gonna trade JJ Watt. Deshaun Watson has already formally asked to be traded, and now like you're losing two icons off your team, and you're just bringing some guy that like people didn't know from until last week, and then the fact that like guys like Brian Daboll wasn't even like really considering it. Like, I think it says a lot that the top guys who were projected to be candidates this year outside of Eric Bieniemy just didn't really seem interested by that job, which makes sense considering the absolute state of peril that the Texans are in right now.
They still have franchise centerpiece David Johnson, though. You forgot about him. And the funny thing about David Culley is, like, a couple weeks ago or during the playoff game when the Ravens were losing, everyone was like, hey, the Ravens need a passing game coordinator. Greg Roman's great about with the run, but they need a passing game coordinator. And then all of a sudden, everyone realized, oh, wait, they do have one. And now this guy got hired. So I guess people were right. The Ravens do now need a passing game coordinator. Oh, yeah. It's been hired by the Texans.
The NFL is such a reactive league. I mean, I think that this is so much a product of Adam Gase and Matt Patricia and even Dan Quinn to some extent. Like, these guys who were – the hype around them was all about what they did in their coordinator roles. You know, they were a big part of building great with Gase offense and the other two defense. And then they came in and they couldn't handle that transition to CEO, you know, or they were lacking in those areas. Like, Gase obviously was just a weirdo. Patricia was – just awful. Like, I mean, he was awful at that part of the job from pretty much day one, dealing with the media, dealing with players, being the face of the franchise. So it seems like it's just swung now to like we talked about Dan Campbell last time, but like I don't know what the thinking is there still with Detroit, but it has to be something along the lines of like he's a guy who will motivate players and oversee the group, and that's clearly what we have going on here. There's also an element of what we talked about with the Philadelphia hire, which is that Culley basically he has no leverage. I mean, this is a guy who is just going to be happy to have this job and is right. Much more likely to listen to Jack Easterby and whatever, you know, whoever is actually making decisions. This had one chance to be a good hire, and that was that it would convince Deshaun Watson to rethink his stance, and it obviously hasn't. So yeah. At this point, it's just really a question.
I was three paragraphs into writing a post about how that could be the reason why this was a good hire, and then the Schefter tweet came.
Right.
And I just erased it.
That's what I thought last night. I was like, maybe David Culley is Deshaun Watson's godfather and we don't know it. Like, maybe they go way back and there's some secret here, but that is not the case.
I'll say this, like, look at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and Culley is in it and Easterby is in it and Leslie Frazier is in it. And I think there's one more that they interviewed. Oh, Josh McCown.
Yeah, Josh McCown.
And they did win an award. Deshaun Watson did win an award from them when he was at Clemson. And it seems like Dabo Swinney is like heavily involved in it. So maybe that's the connection that they were hoping to that would repair their relationship. But obviously it didn't.
Yeah. What happens next for the Texans? I mean, this is like Chuck said, this is a this does nothing for the fans, I don't think. I mean, this guy could. He could literally eat a kneecap at his introductory press conference, and I don't think it's going to get people fired up for this team.
Yeah. So and that just made me think. I was just thinking, like, I would hate to be David Culley during that press conference. Like, how many questions about Deshaun Watson is he going to get? And and what are you supposed to say? Like, dude, I don't know. I just got here. Obviously, I would like to coach him, but he's not going to be here. So, like, it's a bad spot to put him in.
Right.
Because no one's excited about it. Deshaun's leaving, and I guess like the only solace for David is like there are no expectations on you this year because you're not going to have a quarterback. And as good as Deshaun was last year, and he was like just unbelievable, they won four games. So it's going to be a long season for him, even if they do end up recouping some of those picks back after they trade Watson. But like you lose Watson to get those picks back, so it's all a wash.
Do you know what this feels like to me? It feels like Jim Tom Sula becoming the 49ers head coach.
Oh, my gosh.
Where they were just had gotten rid of Harbaugh, who was like such a character and figure in that organization. And then they just went with this yes man that the front office would be able to control. And we saw what happened. They had just lost a bunch of talent, I believe, after Harbaugh left. and they just hit rock bottom the next year. And I think that's what we're going to see in Houston. I don't see any scenario where they're not the worst team in the NFL, unless they get the number two pick and Justin Fields is just amazing.
Right.
Which is possible.
Yeah. That's a good transition to some of these questions that we got from you guys. As I said, a lot of them are QB focused, just because, first of all, our show is often QB focused. We tend to talk about QBs a lot, their most important position in the sport. And then some offseason stuff, and then finally some Super Bowl related things. So we'll take those one by one. I wanted to open up in Atlanta because I know Charles is paying attention. This one is from Mark Zinno, who is he a radio? I mean, he must be a radio guy down there.
He was in Baltimore, wasn't he?
He was in Baltimore.
I didn't know he's in Baltimore. I know he used to do radio in Atlanta for sure.
Okay. Yeah, and he was in Baltimore before that. So he says, if the Chargers can move on from Philip Rivers and the Lions can move on from Matt Stafford, why won't the Falcons move on from Matt Ryan at this point? Should they? And he follows up here, and I stress this isn't about Matt Ryan not being able to play at a high level. It's about an organizational decision to transition sooner rather than later, rather do it 1 year too early than 1 year too late. We've touched on this a couple times, but Charles, what's your feeling on this one?
Matt Ryan has almost a $50 million dead cap number for this year, and I think that's really it. And honestly, I don't think they need to move on from him. I mean, the scenario that I'm hoping for is you draft someone like, Trey Lance, who I just tweet about like every day now, and have him sit behind Ryan for a year or two. But I think what makes this situation a little bit different is just how much money they still owe Ryan. So I think that's the only thing that really makes it different. Maybe if he was due less money next year or was not going to be like an anchor on the Falcons cap, then I think that is something they would actually explore. But, Arthur Smith has talked a lot about how excited he is for Matt Ryan to be in this offense. And I would be pretty shocked if they ended up trading Matt Ryan just because of the financial hit. And they are already like almost $30 million over the cap. And they only have 30 players on the team right now. So Terry Fontenot has his work cut out for him. And I think that Matt Ryan is going to be a part of that team next year.
Also, I'd add that like Matt Ryan has won an MVP award with this team and gone to the Super Bowl with them. So, yeah. I think the closest comparison would be Rivers rather than Stafford, who, like, for all of the stats he's put up, they've never won a playoff game. So, like, that sentiment isn't there. But with the Chargers and Rivers' contract was over, and they just let him walk to free agency. They didn't get rid of him. So, I don't know if those are the best comparisons. And yeah, Matt Ryan still has a lot left in the tank, I feel like. Especially in this type of offense, I think he could be really good next year. And I don't think the Falcons see themselves as too far away from getting back in the playoffs. It's not a complete rebuild.
No, I don't think they should either. I mean, obviously that 4-12 record was a disaster. But I would also argue that they woefully underachieved during the season. And they weren't actually like as bad a quality as a 4-12 team usually is. So, even if I wasn't a fan of the Falcons, I would still be looking at them as like a regression team, going in the other way. I think they can, make the playoffs if things break right for them. And Arthur Smith is like really as good as a play caller as he seems to be over the last 2 years in Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, if Arthur Smith can make Tannehill look as good as he did, why not give it a shot with Matt Ryan and see what happens, right? Like the natural talent level. Ryan's a few years older, but seeing what he can do in a Arthur Smith run offense is worth the 1 year. And then that's probably what makes it a little bit different is that I think in general, we all agree like, yeah, teams do need to move on more quickly than they do. But this dynamic and combined with the salary cap implications.
Right. And I just think if you're the Falcons, like what better situation is it than to bring a young guy in behind someone like Matt Ryan? Like even if you don't take someone, fourth overall or in the first round, if they decide to trade back, like, you pop someone like early round two and not Mac Jones, and let them here and just see what happens. Because I think one good thing or one thing that Atlanta, I don't think they're trying to push Matt Ryan out the door. Like you see,
right.
Like we've seen in other situations. So yeah, I think he's going to be here.
All right. This one's from Last Minute Lon. Will my Colts be fun if they get Stafford? We know they won't beat the Chiefs, but I just want to have some fun. A small ask. This is, I guess, this is how everyone in the AFC feels, right? For the next decade, like, yeah, if we could just make it fun.
We just want to have fun. Yeah, like,
what would Matthew Stafford look like in Frank Reich offense?
That's a good question. I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
I would guess he would change it a bit. It's not going to be what Rivers was running, and maybe it would look more like what the Eagles were running with Wentz. Right. And I think that could work. I mean, I think Matt Stafford is both underrated and overrated. I think he's kind of he's only overrated by Lions fans, really, who think he's Patrick Mahomes or something. But he's a good quarterback, and I think it, like with a smart coaching staff, and if that defense can, you know, stay pretty good, I think they'll be back in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that if you put Stafford with Frank Reich, like I would be stunned if that was like a bad offense or something. It's so weird because Stafford, he's been in the league since 2009, and like he was drafted 1 year after Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco, and I feel like we don't think of him as being in the league for that long, and maybe that's just like the cloud of irrelevancy that is Detroit Lions football, but. You know, I still don't know how good I think Stafford is. I mean, I know last year when, you know, he and Bevel were clicking, like he can put up big numbers and he's got the arm strength to put it anywhere on the field. But you also go through lulls where it's just bleh, football, like where it's not bad, but you're not really getting anything out of it. So I think that Frank Reich would probably be the best offensive coach that Stafford has had over his career. I mean, the Lions have failed him to a degree. So, I mean, I if Stafford ended up with the Colts, I would be shocked if that was like a bad pairing by the end of the season.
I'd be picking them to win the AFC South.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Next one is from linemen are skill positions. Agree. Seriously, though, my question is that with guys like Jared Goff, Carson Wentz and Jimmy G proving that they are replaceable level QBs, do more front offices start to realize that they shouldn't overpay for average QBs? We've touched on this before, but wondering what you guys think about this at this point.
It seems like it without the Rams are treating Jared Goff very publicly. It's like they're just like, who cares? Like, I don't know if he's going to be around. And which it's so easy not to do that. So maybe I think NFL teams might see the Rams and follow their lead. I don't know.
Right. The question is, can you do it when there's like the Baker Mayfield thing is the perfect one, right?
Right.
It's like there's some he's built some momentum, but it's so easy to envision Mayfield as Goff in a few years, right? Like that the Browns will keep being okay, but not be able to take a step forward, and Baker will clearly be the reason why. So the question is, can a team stop themselves before giving the contract?
You know, what's interesting about this question is like, you know, there were a handful of people that were bouncing this idea around with the Rams before it was time for them to pay Goff. Like,
Steven was one of them, I think.
Yeah, Steven was one of them. But especially when you look at the Rams system, I mean, he Goff is playing with like kids' gloves, where you know they're breaking the huddle early so Sean McVay can tell him what's going on, and like they're running a lot of the same stuff like over and over throughout the game. I mean, it just made you think like. All right, we know Sean McVay is really, really good at coaching offense and still one of the best offensive play callers in the league. Like, imagine what he could do with a more dynamic quarterback. And if you pay Goff, you're not going to be able to get that dynamic quarterback. And I think that is kind of what the Rams figured out this year. Like, man, like, Goff's not the worst quarterback ever, but there's a clear ceiling with this. And, you know, they've done a pretty good job drafting and with their free agency decisions. So, they've been able to stay competitive, but we all know like when they go to Lambeau, it's hard to score. It's hard to score like in these high leverage situations. I mean, they didn't even put up too many points with Goff's help against the Seahawks. I know he was hurt, but still like you see the schematic limitations of what a player like Goff brings for you.
Yeah. And I wrote that one piece about how when Wolford was starting, I think was it week 17, the first week he started? And I said, like, he's not as good as Goff is, but he adds an element that Sean McVay has never had. And I think it would open McVay's eyes. And the fact that it did happen and Walford, who is not good. Like, he's not good at all. He was like the 12th pick in the AAF quarterback draft. The fact that he's opening up Sean McVay's eyes and like making him wary of continuing to pay Goff is a big indictment on a player like Goff. And I hope the Browns, who have this like forward thinking front office, the Moneyball front office or whatever you want to call it, like maybe they would be the ones that do this. Like, they've done creative stuff in the past, but I don't buy it because I think the Browns fans would just revolt. Like, I've seen them push back against trading for Deshaun Watson, which is just crazy to me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so much of the problem is that owners and the people sort of charged with making money for a franchise still think of the quarterback as such a big marketing piece. So if you're getting into a situation where you're going through a quarterback every 3-4 years until his rookie deal is up and you don't want to pay him, like, that would make them feel uncomfortable. I mean, that's part of the Matt Ryan thing in Atlanta too. Like, he's been the face of the franchise. Obviously, owners actually make money by holding on to the team and selling it for double what they bought it. Like, that's really where the value comes from. But they're still sort of attuned to this idea of, like, we need to sell jerseys and we need to build loyalty around the team. And one way to do that is to have a quote unquote franchise quarterback. And like, the playbook has been pay them like a franchise quarterback and declare them a franchise quarterback. But we're seeing that it's obviously not working so well.
And the closest we've ever seen a team do this is Washington with Kirk Cousins and how they treated Cousins. And like, they were ridiculed for the most part in the media. Like, a lot of people thought they were dumb and they were like, why aren't you paying Kirk Cousins? Why did you let him leave? And we're seeing in Minnesota exactly why they didn't do it. I thought Washington was very smart for how they handled that. I did not think it was smart to then trade for Alex Smith and pay him basically what you would have to pay Kirk Cousins. But that first part they had right.
All right. Next one is from Josh Rosenberg. He's got a 2-point question. I'm going to hit you with the first one. At what point will the Dolphins have given too much up for Deshaun?
I'll go first on this one because it's easy. There is no point.
Yeah,
right. And I think what's interesting about this is, like, I don't know if this is actually a new rule or if this has been existing for a long time, but teams can only trade first round picks for the next 3 years. So basically, you know, you're talking about 3 first-round picks for Deshaun Watson, which is like, duh, yeah, of course I'm going to do that. And if you're a team like the Jets or the Dolphins and you have 2 first-round picks this year, you might send 4. And I just don't think that there is a price that is really too high. Like I guess what's fun to think about is, like, what would be too much of an ask to get Deshaun Watson back? Like, if I'm the Dolphins, I don't see any player on my team that I'm not sending back in the trade for Deshaun Watson. If I'm the Jets, you know, maybe I try to protect Mekhi Becton and Quinnen Williams, but just because they have so few foundational pieces. But I think it would have to be an enormous, egregious ask for it to be way too much for Deshaun Watson, because we're all kind of cool starting it at 3 first-round picks. So, like, I don't really know how much more you can get with that, because if you're giving that up, then who cares what players you throw in?
Yeah. You guys did a post today where you ranked the teams in the NFL by how much they should want to trade for Deshaun Watson. And basically the only team – well, there's two teams that shouldn't want to trade for him. One's the Texans, who already have him. They should just want to keep him. And then the other team is the Chiefs, who have Patrick Mahomes. And, like, that's our thought about Deshaun Watson, right? Like, he's – if Mahomes is like a absolute, like, probably the best player we've ever seen the quarterback play the quarterback position. He has to do it for longer before we really get into those debates. But like, at the level he's playing, and Watson, it's almost impossible to really evaluate how close he is to Mahomes because of the mess around him. I mean, the dude's playing in a swamp. He's got nothing. Like, the organization is just so messy. It's really hard to tell, but he's that good. Like, the draft picks, even first round draft picks are lottery tickets, and Deshaun is millions of dollars. Like, he's what the prize you want to hope for with all those picks.
Yeah, I don't even like consider Mahomes in any of the, like, when you're comparing players, like, he's his own thing and nobody compares to him. But I would still say, if you switch those two teams when they were drafted, like, if Mahomes went to the Texans and Watson went to the Chiefs, I think Watson would be putting up similar numbers. I don't know if, like, I don't know how to say that. The intangibles would be the same. Like, Mahomes just gives you a chance to, like, you never think Mahomes is going to lose. You always think they're about to score a touchdown. I don't know if you get that same feeling with Watson, but I think he's better than any other quarterback in the league not named Mahomes. And that's just because Mahomes, I don't even consider him a part of the league. He's not even in the same level with these other guys.
Yep. I posted something today from Ben Baldwin's box score sites where, since he's been drafted, Deshaun's been, just based on EPA, the sixth best quarterback in the league. And I want to say the second best was Drew Brees with, like, it was like 0.23 EPA over the last four seasons. And then Mahomes was number one with 0.33, like, just blowing everyone out the water, not even close to number two. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable. You are so right. Like, he's in his own class, and that's fine. Just appreciate his greatness while giving love to other guys too.
All right. The second part of Josh Rosenberg's question is Saints over under win total with Taysom as their starting QB. And that's Joseph Brown also asked us, how competitive do you think the Saints will be next season? So those are all sort of tied together.
Ooh, I'm ready for this one. How about minus one for your...
Wait, how many games are they going to play against former Wake Forest receivers at quarterback? A big question I need answered.
Defense
is pretty good though, right?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it could regress. It can, like, a defense could always regress. So let's just say the defense is average. I would say, just due to Sean Payton, I'd say six. I'd put the over under at six, and I'd probably lean towards the under.
Yeah. I mean, with Payton, there's nothing you can rule out. And I mean, how many games did they win with Taysom? They would go 4-1 with him or something like that?
2-1. 2-1.
2-1.
No, 3-1. 3-1. But I don't count the Broncos game.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the annoying part about the Saints. Like, they're facing, you know, almost what? Like $60 million over the cap for next year?
I thought it was like 90 or something, like 100, like something ridiculous.
I always get them and the Eagles mixed up. Like, they're the top two, and it's egregious numbers. And this is going to be a tougher offseason for them than normal, but, like, they always seem to find a way to wiggle their way out of it. And then
it's like the Trump tweet. The right. Like, how's he going to get his way out of this one? And it's like, nevertheless.
Nevertheless. And they always seem to put out these competitive teams, even when we know that they're entering offseason in cap hell, and they're always in the playoffs. And, like, part of that is due to, you know, how good Drew Brees and Sean Payton have been. But I just know from watching the Saints for so long over my whole life, like, I don't care who they have under center behind there. They are going to be a pain in the ass when you play them. And honestly, like, this offseason for the Saints and the Eagles, like, I am just fascinated by it because you have, like, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get down under the salary cap. And, like, who goes, who stays, how do you set yourself up to sign free agents? Like, I'm just super fascinated by what they do in the offseason.
Yeah, the Saints and Eagles cap situation is like the Mahomes and Watson of cap situations. Like, the Saints is like on another level, and you can't even compare it to anyone else. But the Eagles, they're just as impressive in terms of just a terrible cap situation.
Oh, man. All right, this next question, it was a direct message to Steven. I assume that it's from somebody in the Cleveland front office, based on the nature of the question. They're just looking for advice from you.
Let me give you a name. That's the Baker Mayfield one, right?
Yeah.
The guy's name is Tweet Deleter.
Okay.
Yeah. I know he works. That's definitely somebody working in Cleveland. Given the caveats you attach to Baker Mayfield's performance earlier this year, he's a play-action heavy QB and all that, would you say his increased performance during the back half of the season showed signs that his pocket game has caught up and potentially launched him into Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford territory? Feel like all the perfect throws he was able to deal from the shotgun with no play action against KC was the cherry on top of showing that in the back half.
Okay. When I say that Baker Mayfield is a play action quarterback, I don't mean like he's incapable of doing anything else. His process in the pocket is not good. It wasn't good in the second half. If you watch like the tape of the Steelers game, and like, he misses a lot of easy reads, I feel like. And I've talked to other people who know a lot more about quarterbacking than I do who agree with this. So yeah, he can make the throws, but do you know who else could make the throws? Jared Goff made a bunch of pretty throws. Like that Thursday night game against the Vikings where he was just throwing dime after dime. When everything's right, they can make the throws. The problem is when plan A isn't there and he has to go to plan B, unless he has a play action fake, it's not going to look good. And that's the issue with me with quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield. You could say the same thing about Jimmy G, who throws the ball as well as anyone. You could say it about Kirk Cousins, who I think he can throw the ball well. All these quarterbacks that have been boosted and their stats have been inflated by the same system. Mitch Trubisky this year had the same thing going on for him. Like, the problem is when he has to read a defense, it doesn't work. And that's what happens when you get put into obvious passing situations. The Browns in that Chiefs game, they didn't start coming back until they started giving Chubb the ball.
So that was a no, I guess.
Yeah, that's a no.
No, he has not been launched into Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford. So Ryan and Stafford, you would say, are much better at processing and getting to their second and third reads without play action.
I think Ryan is one of the best quarterbacks in the league when it comes to that. Like, he does it as well as – not as well as Breeze, who I think is, like, the standard. But I think he's up there with Brady in terms of that aspect, just that aspect of his game.
Yeah, I mean – and that's why I'm so optimistic about this Arthur Smith thing, because I think, like you said, I think Matt still has enough in the tank where, you know, I don't even care about getting back to this, like, a deep playoff run or anything. But yeah, I still think he has enough left in the tank to give you at least a couple more respectable seasons with the right play calling. And I think one interesting thing about Ryan is, like, especially since Shanahan was here starting in 2015, he's gotten so much more comfortable with scrambling and running, and it's like actually become a part of his game. So, you know, I think that, and I say this as a biased ass Falcons fan, but I just think his whole game is a little bit more dynamic than some of the guys he gets compared to.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like that 2016 season was like, that was the one time we saw what happens when you put an actual quarterback into one of these offense, like, records get broken. I mean, you add in Julio Jones and it makes it easier, but I still think that supporting cast was kind of overrated. Like, behind Julio Jones, like, Sanu was obviously good at the time. The two running backs are good, but they were still just running backs. Like, it wasn't like just star studded cast like you see in Tampa Bay right now. I think it was closer to like what you see in Kansas City, where you have Tyreek Hill, who's just this special receiver, a good tight end, and Kelsey, he's a great tight end. But after those two guys, it's not like the Bucks, where they have four guys on the roster that have had 1,300-yard seasons.
Right.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
All right, next question is from one of our most loyal listeners, Nick. He wants us to redraft the 2018 QBs. I know, Steven, you will go with Kyle LaLetta first. that leaves Charles with the second pick. No, what do you guys think? This is obviously
still Lamar for me.
We're talking so yeah, just to recap, this is the Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson first round, in that order. Redo it for me, you guys. Which
I'll let Chuck go first.
I mean, I'm still taking Lamar number one. I just look, the dude won an MVP, all right? He's a unanimous MVP. He's the only reason why that Ravens offense can even gain like 100 yards in the game during this season. I mean, the guy, he's just a spectacular football player, and he's changed that Ravens team from like the second he stepped on the field. And I know that, you know, his rookie year wasn't all that efficient and it kind of ended in a catastrophe against the Chargers. But man, like that dude just adds so much to your offense, and he did it from day one. Like it was just a completely different look, different feel. And the fact that, you know, he was kind of
the Chargers game, they just got out schemed. I mean, right, that was right. Just flat out the Ravens getting out schemed, yeah. Period.
And the fact that he was able to kind of keep it trucking this year, and after he got COVID, he was just on a tear. He's still my QB1 from that class.
Yeah, I have no disagreement with that. Like, I'm going to go number two. I'm going to take Josh Allen. I know.
Pain in your voice. Pain.
But, I mean, it was between him or Baker Mayfield, so either way. But, I mean, I'm still of the opinion that Josh Allen is going to regress next year. I don't know how heavily he's going to regress. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback yet in my mind, just based on watching him play. But I do think he's capable of being a top half of the league quarterback for the rest of his career. I don't know how long it's going to last. Like, I don't know why he doesn't hear the same questions that Lamar Jackson hears about longevity when he's just like trying to barrel over guys. And you could say that he has size, but Cam Newton, everyone's saying Cam Newton's washed up at age 30. So why? I don't understand how that's different, except for in one key area. Yeah. But yeah, I'll go Allen, Mayfield, Darnold, and Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I mean, I think mine would look the same. Allen, the thing that worries me about Allen next year, and I think that some of this is going to help that he gets Dabble back next year, the offensive coordinator, but the amount of like off script plays and just depending on your offensive line to act like four, you know, you got five incredible Hulks up there and just giving him time back there. I get a little bit worried that the processing is still a little bit slow for him when it comes to.
Right. I mean, we've seen Carr right. be really great behind a good offensive line.
Right. And I think, you know, we saw Jared Goff do it too. We saw Baker Mayfield do it this year. And, you know, I just get worried that he's still a little bit too reliant on just being this kind of backyard football player when he has the tools to just stand back there and fire. Just, you know, figure it out, Josh.
All right. This question is fantastic. I am really excited to discuss this. It's a little long, but I'm going to read the whole thing because it's worth it. This is from Amina Poco. Something I've noticed as a Ravens fan and general observer of the league are OCs oversimplifying their offenses for their POC QBs. Seen it with Cam in Carolina, Kyler and Cliff, Deshaun and O'Brien, Tua and Miami, Lamar and Roman, etc. Add Russ, and all of them seem to get thrown into overly run-heavy schemes. The offense Louisville ran with Lamar was so much more complex than what we're asking him to do. Second part of the question, is this type of handling damaging long-term? I watch Russ, and I see a QB whose process was never allowed to properly develop like some of his peers. It's a great question.
That's absolutely a great question. I've never thought of that before.
Yeah, I will say I agree. I disagree with some of the names on the list. Like, I don't think Deshaun Watson has been played. I think he's just been in uncreative offense. Like, I think they put a lot on his plate mentally.
There's a difference between bad and overly simplified.
Right.
And I will say for Deshaun, that Clemson offense was terrible for him. And I had people thinking that he was just like some dumb inaccurate quarterback when in reality they ran like four passing plays a game and defensive squad on him.
I had the same worry about Trevor Lawrence and like him having to stay there for 3 years in that offense. I think, I don't know, it could still prove to be true that it might have stalled his development a little bit. Like, I thought he should have been able to leave after year one just because I didn't want to see him in that offense for 2 years. It's so boring.
I mean, it's like the Ohio State. Like, it's like how Ohio State plays defense. Clemson's like, well, we got better players than Houston Rock. We're not going to think about this too hard. And they steamroll you for 50 points a game.
Right. My first blush answer to this is yes, that absolutely black quarterbacks are put in situations where offensive coordinators are sort of prone to oversimplify and to like, and think that because a quarterback's athletic, they also cannot run basic things or beyond basic things. And I think it's absolutely damaging.
Especially with Lamar, it definitely is. I don't know if it's like damaged his development. I just think they're not getting the most out of him. Like for a guy like Russell Wilson, I think that offense just got the most out of him. I don't think limit him. And that's because he has the height thing where he still can't really see over the line. So you kind of get it. But with like a quarterback like Lamar or Cam, who can clearly see over the line and are comfortable in the pocket, I don't get it.
Here's the thing. Justin Herbert had plenty of red flags as a QB, right, coming into his pro career. And the Chargers just sort of let it rip. Like they just gave him a big full offense where he could throw the ball all over the field. And
after they almost killed Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, right. That's true. I mean, they would not. Like, I don't think a black quarterback that happens. I think that there are all sorts of like guardrails put up, and well, we have to let him adjust. We have to let him acclimate. He's still developing. You know, he's learning to read defense. You just hear all those cliches about a black quarterback, whereas. Like Herbert did nothing as a college quarterback to show right. that like you just like let him give him the playbook and go. But that's what happened, and he was great. But Lamar, you know, we don't know because we haven't been able to see it. But maybe Lamar does the same thing.
Yeah, and here's what I think people need to understand, and like a rare, very serious point. It's like when you go out into the world, and or at least the way that like the world has interacted with. Black people is, you know, they were just not seen as smart as other people. And I think what people need to realize is like those beliefs, like they, of course, like they permeate into sports. Like, of course they permeate into politics, like stuff like that, because, you know, we're all humans and working and trying to, you know, I mean, most of us trying to do the right thing day by day. But, you know, if you're going to be people that are actively interacting with society, like you can't be surprised when society shows up like at the front step of your football stadium. So now that I think about it, sure, like that question's pretty valid, I think. And it's tricky because I don't want to say like it's a thing where, you know, an offensive coordinator looks at Cam Newton or something and says, oh, we're going to run the ball 300 times because that's all I think that he can handle. I think it's just something that's like subconscious and
right.
just something that you just kind of walk around with every day.
There's also something with Cam where it's like he's such a freak and like a running quarterback in the way that we've never seen a quarterback really be a runner, that there's probably some pressure to actually build a run first offense just because you have Cam Newton.
Right.
But that doesn't apply to other guys. And like, on the other side, you have the white quarterbacks who don't get those labels for some reason, even though if you just watch like Baker Mayfield in the pocket, like he was getting comps to Drew Brees before the draft. If you watch him in the pocket right now, he looks nothing like he's just a mess in the pocket. He's not a guy that's going to go 1-2-3 through his progressions and know where to go and read the coverage. He is the guy that everyone thinks like Cam Newton and Lamar Jackson are.
Right.
So I think it's totally based on race, and I don't know, maybe the coaches see the same thing. And I will say this, I do think like from the outside looking in, a lot of people, including like myself, like I don't know how complex their offense, like teams' offenses are really. Like it's hard to really judge and compare offenses. Like I don't know if the Chiefs' offense is any more complicated than like the Chargers' offense right now. I think there's just more window dressing. It's a little more creative, but it's always hard to gauge that, especially like as a fan who's not really like studying tape.
Right.
All right. Let's move into the questions about some off-season things. This one's from Gucci Gang Free Bobby. Asked a couple questions. Is Pete Carroll the problem in Seattle?
He's one of them. He just looks at football in a little bit of an ancient way. But, you know, I know that me and Steven have talked about this with other people, but like the run the ball stuff is not as egregious as it sounds, I think, sometimes. I think maybe the messaging gets confused. But I for me personally, I absolutely think that running the ball is something that has to be a part of Seattle's game plan, like from a week-to-week basis. It just comes like the example that I think of all the time is the playoff game against Dallas. And there was a sequence where they ran on first down, got to like second and eight, ran on second down. I think they got 0 yards. They ran on third down, got to like third and seven, and then Russ threw a bomb on fourth down for like 20 yards to Tyler Lockett. And it's like that's like the meme of the Seahawks offense. You can't teeter too hard in that, like, you know, we're going to be meatheads and run the ball every play. But there does need to be a balance, especially for a quarterback like Russ that like just plays really unlike any other quarterback that we've seen and have like this level of success to go along with it.
Yeah, like we saw it this year. the let Russ Cook thing happened. They let Russ Cook and it didn't work out. And it's because they had to find a middle ground. Like, I agree that, what was it, like 2 years ago, they were like the most run heavy team in the league. Like, that was bad.
Yeah.
But the other end of the extreme is bad too, because, and this could, we could do a whole episode on this, but you start passing every down and teams don't have to worry about defending their run gaps, it makes passing the ball a lot harder. That's why on third down, the efficiency numbers go way down, because teams get into their sub packages. They play more complex coverages. They can disguise because they don't have to worry about that safety manning the B gap. And that's what happened to the Seahawks this year. So I don't think Pete Carroll is necessarily the problem. And I would say he does more good than harm to that team.
Agreed.
But he has that one blind spot where if he could just, you know, adjust his priors just a little bit, I think they would be in a good spot.
Right. It's not even like he has to do a whole lot of tweaking to his philosophy. Just a little bit, Pete. Just a little bit. And I think they went a little bit too hard the other direction this year. Like, you know, the let Russ Cook stuff, and he's, you know, one of the leaders in the league, or maybe the leader in the league in early passing downs, and like it all crumbled by the end of the year. And I know that some Seahawks players have talked about that defense were kind of catching up to what they were doing. I mean, I don't know about that because I haven't watched all the tape, but, you know, I think that they need to be a team that runs the ball well for them to maximize what they do. Maximize the team they want to be.
Right. I mean, I think we should mention is that Carroll, like, they did not retain Brian Schottenheimer, the offense coordinator, for the last couple of years, and they're hiring a guy from the Rams. So, like, Pete Carroll's job is to find people who are going to have a better sense of how to make this work. So it seems like, you know, from as much information as we have, he's doing as good a job as can be expected. He's hiring from one of the young offensive genius staffs, and we'll see how that actually plays out. All right. Next question was, this is from Chris Sachs. As a Ravens fan, who should I hope they sign in free agency to upgrade the passing game? Galladay, Godwin, or Allen Robinson?
I like A-Rob. Just because they don't have anyone that can give Lamar like a little margin for error. Like, it's all got to be precise pinpoint stuff. And I think that part of that was due just because the construction of their passing game was so bad. But I think they need a guy who can just go up and get it.
Yeah, I think like each of those guys gives them that. Like, I wouldn't be, I'd be happy if they got any of them. I think Allen Robinson is the best contested catch guy of the bunch. Mm-hmm. The only reason I would lean Godwin is just because he's so proficient from the slot. And I think that plays a little more to Lamar's strengths, but I don't think it helps the offense as much as getting a perimeter guy. Cause you need someone to like, you need someone that defenses are going to have to worry about when he's lined up out there, and they're not going to just be able to load the box against Lamar. Like, people like use how the Bills and other, I think the Titans did last year in the playoffs, as an indictment of Lamar, like the fact that they're playing so close to the line. That's an indictment of those receivers they have. The teams aren't afraid. If Julio Jones is out there, they're not playing that Nick quarters defense where the two safeties are like 8 yards away from the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can't go wrong with either Penn State guy, honestly. Wide receiver, you. Yeah,
and I'll add this: like, even if they sign Allen Robinson or Will Fuller or one of these guys, they still need to add someone pretty early in the draft. Like, don't get complacent here. Like, you have one of the most unique talents that we've ever seen at quarterback, and I just get so worried that they think that there's like a level of autopilot, like to having someone like Lamar Jackson, kind of like the Panthers did with Cam for a stretch of his career, where you know that if things really go wrong, even
he'll
if
save
he's
you.
Not passing game, even if he's not having a great day pass the ball, like he can still do something that will save your game and push you over the edge in some of these games. And I would just hate for them to get like put Lamar into a Superman role where he has to be that when they have options this year to get a lot better at receiver. So hopefully they go after it.
If Chris Godwin and Allen Robinson can make Christian Hackenberg look good and draftable, imagine what they would do for Lamar.
Bill O'Brien made Hackenberg look good. So that's the real truth of that story, which makes even less sense somehow. All right, let's get into some draft questions. What type of impact do you think the limited college season and canceled combine will have on how teams look at the 2021 draft? So it's not only the combine that's canceled. It's like basically all workouts of any kind. Like, they're the whole eco. Yeah, the Senior Bowl is happening, thankfully. Thanks, Jim Nagy. The entire, but like the rest of how this all happens, the whole ecosystem is supremely limited compared to most years. What I don't know that we can actually answer this question, but we can throw out some guesses. What do you guys think?
Before I answer, we should get Jim Nagy on the pod and ask him non-football questions the whole time. It's like asking about life. But I don't know. Like, it's impossible to say. Who knows? Like, we were speculating all offseason, how would this the pandemic affect the season? And, like, does anyone have an answer to that?
I don't know.
After like 4 months of watching,
it was not nearly as messy. You know, like we were all sort of like, well, they're not going to have preseason games and they're not going to have as much camp. And like the product has basically been a lot the same. Like, you know, it was just pretty much NFL football. I think what we learned is we probably didn't need all, like a lot of that buildup is artificial. And I feel that's my sense for this is like, if anything, all that stuff led to over analysis and that, we'll find out here that like the results are basically the same with limited information. We're still going to have about the same correctness to where people are drafted, which is not at all right. Like we don't know that Tom Brady's playing in his 10th Super Bowl and he was like the 3000th pick. Like, you know, we just don't know.
Well, I actually didn't know that Tom Brady was drafted. Right? Yeah.
Did you didn't know he was drafted in the 6th round? We something that I've never heard before.
Yeah, I think he was 199th pick. But dude, honestly, my take with this offseason, because we kind of partially went through this last year where everything kind of came to a freezing halt after the combine. And you know, what I would say is don't give these teams an excuse like when they mess up, because they're just as likely to mess up in any other year when they have all the information.
Right.
It's kind of a crapshoot, and you know a lot of teams are going to make mistakes regardless. So I don't really know if this has any effect on the draft, really, other than in, like you might, if you're a team, you might have to do a little bit more work in to get like answers on like what kind of people these guys are. Like if you're not going to have access to as many people as you usually do with the combine, maybe you got to do a little more work around there. But like you're still going to get these numbers on their athletic testing at some point throughout the process. So, you know, if your team strikes out and goes 0-7 in the draft, do not blame it on the pandemic. That's just because your team sucks.
How are we going to know if a prospect would rather be a cat or a dog, or whether their mother is a prostitute? How are we going to get that very vital information?
How are we going to find the red flags for all the poor kids from rough neighborhoods?
Whether they cook or not. You remember, like, who was it? Eli Apple, like, didn't cook enough. And then was it Mekhi Becton that cooked too much?
Too much, yeah. He was interested in cooking. How dare you?
My favorite one still is back – it was when Kelechi Asmeli got drafted, and someone wrote that they were worried about him because he was raised by all women and they thought he might be soft. I'm like, have you seen him play football? Have you seen him play football?
That's the worst.
It comes to your mind?
I think my favorite is when Cam Newton was asked whether he'd rather be a cat or a dog, and he said, or no, they asked him, are you more of a cat or a dog? And he was like, neither. I'm like a human. And then that was seen as like a sign of dissent. Like they're like, can you believe this guy?
doesn't play along. All right, here's another one that was sent directly to Steven. I assume this is from, I don't even know, is Scott Fitterer, is that his name, the Panthers new GM? I assume this is from him. Should Carolina draft a QB this year or keep holding off?
Yeah, I got this from two different people. And it depends on who's there. Probably just hold off. Like, I don't want another Will Greer on the Panthers. Like, we don't draft Mac Jones or Kyle Trask or any of those white SEC guys, please. Just if you can't get either, like, Lance is that's worst case scenario for me. Anyone below Lance, I don't want. I'm not interested in. Trade for Watson. Do that. That's better.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't even know if Trey Lance is a great situation for the Panthers or Trey Lance, because if Teddy comes out and starts struggling, they're going to, hey, Trey, go get your butt in there. And I as big of a Trey Lance fan as I am, like part of the reason why I like Atlanta for him is because like, I think he just might need to sit for a year. And I don't think that that's an indictment on his talent. I mean, he hasn't played.
He played one football game this year.
Right. He played one game, and he's coming from North Dakota State. And I think his North Dakota State film is really impressive. But, like, he was 19 years old, and we haven't really seen him play since. So I just think the situation where all right, Trey, you haven't played in 2 years. Go step out there against the NFL defense. Week one is just not really what you're looking for there, which is why I get worried about the Panthers' connection to him.
All right, similar question, but for the Falcons. This is from DTH Mason. At the moment, it seems like Atlanta is staying out of the musical chairs game at QB, which puts them at a really interesting position at fourth overall without a need at wide receiver or a premier pass rusher on the board. What would you say is the best route for them to go? So we're pretending like Atlanta shouldn't or isn't going to want to draft Trey Lance.
Or Zach Wilson or something like that.
Yeah, right. What do you think they should?
I think you have to trade down.
Of course.
Because I mean, just think of, and it's just more about the players that are in this draft more than anything. Because look,
and the teams that need QBs,
right? And all the teams that need QBs, you can get a huge haul for number four in this draft. Like you can get a huge haul at number four. And I think what I lost my train of thought, but going back to the draft. The players at the top of the draft, like they don't really fit Atlanta's need. Like we're talking about, you know, Jamar Chase or Devonta Smith. Well, you got Julio and Calvin Ridley. Taking a receiver at four would be crazy. You're talking about Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon, and Slater, the kid from Northwestern. Well, you just paid Jake Matthews, and 2 years ago you picked Caleb McGarry in the first round. And I can't be swayed under any situation that taking Micah Parsons.
I was about to say
is a good idea. I've watched Micah Parsons tape. I think he's a great football player, but if I'm going to take an inside linebacker top five, he's got to be like Ray Lewis right off the bat. So
yeah, and there's also isn't there like off field concerns with him?
You guys know I can mute you, right? He's outrageous. Micah Parsons is incredible.
No, he's a great player.
Okay, you can use a top five pick on problematic Isaiah Simmons if you want. But
all right, also with the Falcons, like they paid Deion Jones and they've got Foye Oluokun who's been balling right next to him, especially this past season. So if you're not going to take a quarterback, you got to trade down. Those are your only two options to me.
I would agree with that. Or just say screw it and take the one of the North Carolina running backs.
I would vomit.
All right. I think we're moving on to actual Super Bowl questions. We are. This is from Kleptolia. Should we be long on the Chiefs O-line versus Bucks D-line, or should we be short Brady versus the Chiefs secondary? And Ken Reed option Mahomes to the boundary, or should he hedge with Kelsey to the intermediate middle? And does Arians put or call Evans after those drops versus Green Bay? This is some Steven said not to ask stock questions. These are some stock terms.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, what is this, long or short? Yeah, I think the Bucks defensive line is going to be a problem for the Chiefs O-line, which is just banged up. I don't even think that's a hot take. I got to work through these other questions. I guess Chuck can weigh in on that too.
Can you read it back again?
It's basically, should we be worried about the Chiefs O-line versus the Bucks D-line?
No, because you have Patrick Mahomes.
What about all right? Yeah, exactly. What about Brady versus the Chiefs secondary? I think the Chiefs secondary is really good. Like, there's no stars in the cornerback group, but I think they can all play, and they have depth. And Spags does a good job of putting them in good positions, like we talked about earlier in the week. So, I think Chiefs secondary might have an advantage there. Actually,
I'm going hedge Kelsey to the intermediate middle. This next question. I think that's the role there. And the other one is two complicated stock terms that I've been trying to read up about, but
it's too much.
I don't really know. This is why we're not rich. We don't know anything about stocks.
Yeah, I'm not going to learn either. So
I spend too much money on my iPhone and coffee too.
you millennial.
You're wow, dude, work harder, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right?
All right, one other, this is an interesting one. If the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, how strong is their case for best team of all time? This is an interesting one, because like, I feel like we
like run wise
not playing well like most of the season. Like,
right. They kind of just cruise on autopilot for the back half of the season. And we're like, all right.
Does that mean they're actually good though? Like, that's the question.
Right? I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing that makes it hard about like to answer for me. Cause I mean, I'm pretty sure like this, is this even the most explosive Chiefs offense of the,
I don't think so. I think 2018 was better.
Yeah, the year he won the MVP, I mean, was insane. And I mean, like, but think about the standard that we're talking about. Like, was this year even one of the best? And Mahomes threw like 40 touchdowns again. It's just
right.
But I think that this is definitely the greatest, you know, 3-year stretch of offensive football that I've ever seen. Just because, like, it's just ruthless efficiency year after year after year after year after year. So
that's the more interesting question to me, right? Is this the best offense? Like, not this year, not the 2020 Chiefs, but like this little 3-year run compared to, like, say,
49ers,
the Rams of the early 2000s. And I'd say yes. Like, I have never seen anything like this. And I kind of remember the greatest show on turf, Rams. And, like, that's the closest thing I can think to this. And they did not have Patrick Mahomes. As good as Kurt Warner was, and he's a Hall of Famer, I think he would admit that he is not Patrick Mahomes. And that gives you just another element that no other team, I don't think, has ever had a quarterback like this.
Right. I mean, he's one of one.
All right. And the question I saved for last from Mina. If the Super Bowl was decided based on Fox Sports illustrations, who would win and why? We don't even know what this question means, but
I have no idea what it means.
This is an easy question for me. If we're talking the two teams that are in the playoffs, one, the Chiefs didn't really get a lot of Fox games, so they don't have a lot of cartoons out there. So it's an easy Bucks for me, because first of all, Tom Brady looks like a 14-year-old boy who did all the HGH in the world. Like, he has like the biggest guns. He has like a huge chest, and his face is just like
His face is almost like as if he had all sorts of plastic surgery to make it perfect.
And then Chris Godwin's cartoon is one of my favorites. Like, he looks like a Dragon Ball Z character. And then you add in Leonard Fournette, who just got an updated cartoon this past weekend, by the way. He got a new cartoon. His first one had the helmet on, but he got upgraded to one without a helmet on it, and it looks pretty good. And Mike Evans is fine. And I'm trying to think of Ronald Jones has a good cartoon too. So yeah, the Bucks are. I think the Bucks might be the most loaded cartoon team in the NFL.
I liked the.
How does it make you feel that you know that just off the top of your head?
Pretty par for the course.
Yeah, this is like actually like a boost to my confidence.
Steven once watched 6 hours of Mighty Ducks films and did like a very detailed breakdown. So this is just who Steven is.
Yeah, I'll also throw in that Fox Gate did a Bruce Arians cartoon. So unless we get an Andy Reid one, which I'm really looking forward to next Sunday, then it's got to be the Bucks. Easy Bucks.
Yeah. All right. I want to steal the take. I forget who had it, but that the Ben Roethlisberger cartoon will just enter the stadium and destroy everyone, because the Ben Roethlisberger cartoon is so jacked.
He would enter the stadium against its will. Lots of work to do, Adam.
And there we go. All right. That's all the time we have. I'm going to try to get this over with and not get fired.
Let's move it on.
we have a good schedule for next week. We have a couple things that we're pretty excited about. Should I call it the Nerds versus film Grinders? Is that how we're framing this?
If you want,
any framing like that, let's do it.
Yeah, so we're gonna have a couple guests come on and offer their from different sides of the football debate and offer their perspectives on the upcoming game, and then Steven and Charles will be digging in on a bunch of different things, how each team is going to try to win the game. We're gonna look at the most significant stats for each team and how they inform what we're gonna be thinking about. We have a fun one. We're gonna do an exercise where we take. Where each team gets to take one player from the other team, which is just fun, but also sort of explains what each team's weakness and strengths are. Steven has a breakdown of this year's regular season Bucks Chiefs game. We'll get into some prop bets. We're going to do our strategy guide, which we've done in previous years. So it'll be a really fun week of content. Hopefully you'll stick with us. Find us on Twitter. Charles is at Forverts. Steven's at the Steven Ruiz. I'm at Chris Corman. Anything we left out, guys? Anything we want to touch on before we go?
I'm just looking forward to having fun at the Super Bowl. The Colts fan.
We're just trying to have fun. It's all it's about. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. Take care and talk to you next week.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.